Lord, will many be saved? You ever wondered that? My old job, before I went to seminary, I traveled extensively the East Coast. So I was on an airplane almost every week. Flew through Chicago more times than I care to remember. And it was in that period of time that I had my reversion back to the faith. And prior to my reversion, it was just a sea of people moving from here to there with all their different reasons why they were going, where they were going. But then after my reversion, I saw something different. I saw sons and daughters of God. I remember one day in particular sitting at my gate waiting to board. And the hallway kind of made an angle. And so I was sitting where I could see down the hallway, and it was filled with people. I mean, wall to wall. And I remember thinking, Lord, you created each and every one of them. It's like you created me. And then, for some reason, this passage came to mind. Lord, will all of us be saved? The question is posed today, how many will be saved? Now, this begs another question, or a couple other questions, that we just don't like to talk about. Father, don't talk about this. Might make people uncomfortable or whatever. The question is, first question is, does hell exist? And again, we don't want to talk about it. It can give us a sense of false security, but a psychological relief if we just don't imagine that it might be real. But my responsibility is to talk about it. Why? Because Jesus did. There are 162 references to the reality of hell in the New Testament alone. 70 of those come from the lips of Jesus. But just like we don't want to talk about ill health, we don't want to talk about the possibility that we could have cancer or some other life-threatening illness. But if your doctor just hid that reality, you'd sue him, and rightfully so. So I don't want to be sued. No, I don't want you or me to go to hell. So does it exist? It has to. It has to for many reasons, but there's one very simple reason. It exists because God is love. Now that seems very contradictory, doesn't it? In fact, that's one of the arguments against hell. If God is love, there couldn't be hell. That just doesn't follow logic based on the nature of God, who He Himself tells us He is. Hell must exist because God is love, and the foundation of love is freedom. And He created us free to choose Him or free to reject Him. But like with any choice, there's a good outcome and there is a bad outcome. Does hell exist? Has to. Otherwise, God would rob us of our free will, and therefore He would contradict His own nature, and He can't do that. now the next question posed to us in the gospel, Lord, will only a few be saved? In other words, is hell full? Is it empty? Are there some there? Are there many? As I heard one priest put it in a talk he gave, sometimes the most intelligent answer a expert in a subject can give when posed a question is, I don't know. And I don't. And neither do you. Oh, there are many, and some many public voices, who claim that they know certain people are in hell. Be really, really careful. Judge not, lest ye be judged. We must judge actions, starting with our own, but we may never judge another's eternal destiny or their status with God. An interesting fact is that the church, who has revealed the names of myriads of people who are in heaven, we call them the saints. That list is called the hagiography. The church has revealed that to the world because God has revealed it to his church, the authorities of his church. And so they've expressed that up to the present day. Saint John Paul the Great, Saint Paul the Sixth, Saint John the 23rd, Saint Teresa of Calcutta, Saint Teresa of Lisieux, and on and on and on. So many. Do you know how many people the church has declared are in hell? Zero. It doesn't say the church has said nobody's in hell. That's not what I'm saying. It says that the church has never declared that any specific person is in hell. Why? Because God hasn't revealed that to the authorities of the church, and therefore they can't reveal that to the world. So let's take figures that we might, if we're betting people, if Vegas was putting odds on it, the strong money would be going to hell. Adolf Hitler, Joseph Stalin, Mao, the most popular names. Are they in hell? I don't know. How about Judas himself? Jesus even calls him the son of perdition, says that he was lost. And yet, that same God hasn't revealed to his church, and therefore to us, that Judas is in fact in hell. The answer is, I don't know, and neither do you. And that goes to the other point of this. Notice the question again. Lord, will only a few people be saved? And as is the case with Jesus, he almost never answers a question directly. His answer is, strive to enter through the narrow gate. You know when you're quoting something, and if you're writing a paper or something, and for context, you have to insert a word that's not in the quote. You put it in those blocks. Well, put in the blocks you, the ones who are addressed, who Jesus is addressing. Lord, will only a few people be saved? You strive to enter through the narrow gate. In other words, what Jesus is saying is, don't worry who might be in hell. Worry that you could go to hell. Worry about that, because it's real and it's possible. Remember when Jesus is conversing with Peter at the end of John's gospel? And John is following behind. And Peter says, Lord, what about him? Remember Jesus' answer? Don't worry about him. You worry about you. Now, that doesn't mean a selfish, just take care of yourself. That's not what I'm saying. It's not what Jesus is saying. In this context, don't worry if there's anybody in hell. You make sure that you go to heaven, and in the process, you will bring others to heaven with you. You worry about getting to heaven, and as you do, you will necessarily bring others with you. Did you know, and if I haven't told you this before, I'm sorry. Did you know that you and I have been given certain souls to get to heaven? We've been assigned souls. I've been assigned all of you plus. Please pray for me. And I ain't kidding. But you've been given certain souls. Moms and dads, your kids first and foremost. And each other. Husbands and wives. The number one purpose of marriage, the number one purpose of any relationship is to get the other one to heaven. How do you do it? By getting yourself there. If we choose the narrow gate, and that doesn't mean a straitjacket. It does not mean a straitjacket. Freedom, exercised properly, begets freedom. The more we live within the parameters that give us that the Lord calls us to, the freer we become. So if we choose the narrow gate, others will be saved because of our example. So strive to live like Jesus. How? Worship God. This will sound familiar from last week. Worship God. Serve the poor. And through that, evangelize. Evangelize by the way you live. Evangelize by the way you love.